This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Republicans are working hard to win Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district as they seek to take control of the U.S. House. The mostly rural district in southwestern and central Wisconsin has been held by Democratic Congressman Ron Kind for 26 years. But it's been part of a larger trend of rural areas increasingly shifting toward the right. As Hope Curwen reports, political analysts and party leaders say the election will likely come down to what rural voters think of this year's candidates.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Hope Curwen. Republicans are fighting hard to win Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district as they seek to take control of the U.S. House. The mostly rural district in southwestern... With just a few weeks left before the November election, Democratic congressional candidate Brad Paff stops by Mahogany Dairy in rural Monroe County. As he walks the barns with the farm's owner, Gary Weber, Paff asks about his milk rotation and his feed mix.
Cows, so you've got more dry matter in here, correct?
Paff is a state senator. Before that, he served as head of the Farm Service Agency office in Wisconsin, and he was state agriculture secretary in 2019.
I mean, this is how I got involved in politics, quite frankly, is by people like Gary, just farmers. I mean, just my uncles and people in my community.
Right next to Weber's farm, a neighbor has a wagon parked along the highway that's covered in campaign signs for Republican candidates, including Paff's opponent, Derek Van Orden. The retired Navy SEAL has been endorsed by former President Donald Trump and has a passionate following on social media. Paff says it doesn't bother him to see the signs. It's the nature of the 3rd District.
But there's something that grounds us all together, that binds us all together, and that is our love for rural Wisconsin and for our heritage and for our culture.
This district was once safe for Democrats, but Trump won the 3rd in 2020, and Kind only narrowly beat Van Orden that year. Kind's retirement ensured the district would be one of the GOP's top targets this year. Now, a growing number of signs suggest the race is slipping away from the Democratic Party. A national election predictor recently changed their rating from leans Republican to likely Republican after a Democratic PAC reportedly canceled TV ads for Paff. Political scientist Anthony Chergosky from the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse says Paff has faced tough odds from the start of the election, needing to energize voters in Democratic cities and hold his own in rural communities. And the district is not alone in seeing communities that were once purple become more strongly red.
Right now, Democrats are not even holding their own in rural Wisconsin. They're getting completely wiped out in rural parts of this state.
Republicans have appealed to voters on cultural issues, painting Democrats as out of touch with the realities of rural people. This has been a major part of Van Orden's campaign. Van Orden's spokesperson declined a request for an interview with the candidate. On social media and in campaign ads, Van Orden has highlighted his military service, stressed the impact of inflation on voters, and labeled Paff as just like the Democrats in D.C.
Prices, higher groceries, just about everything. Brad Paff, he backed Joe Biden 100% of the time. That's what you get when you spend your career in politics. Well, it ain't me.
Brian Westrate is former chair of the 3rd District Republican Party. He thinks voters aren't impressed with Paff's career working for government agencies, and they're looking for someone who's more relatable.
Derek has, you know, had a career serving his country in the military, and then has since then been a small businessman and a volunteer and worked in the private sector. And there's just a clear contrast there.
Paff has hit Van Orden on his stance against abortion and for Van Orden's attendance at the Trump rally that eventually became the January 6th insurrection. Chergosky says Paff has also embraced a more patriotic message and tried to connect with voters on rural cultural issues. Chergosky thinks it's rhetoric that does resonate with voters in the region. But some rural Democrats say one candidate isn't enough to turn around the party's reputation outside of the state's largest cities. Sean Murphy Lopez is a Democrat from Richland County who ran for state assembly in 2020. He branded himself as Rural Sean, complete with a campaign ad filmed on his farm. He lost the race. But Murphy Lopez thinks it was because of discontent with national issues, like COVID-19 restrictions and the sometimes violent protests after the murder of George Floyd.
They look at those letters behind the names, you know, and they say, in general, I think I support the Republicans right now more than I do the Democrats.
If Democrats want to change that, he says they'll need national figures who return to a message that speaks to working people. Hope Curwen, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, the National Assessment of Educational Progress, or NAEP, released a state-by-state report Monday that shows math and reading scores have dropped since 2019 and the start of the pandemic for 4th and 8th graders. Some of the key findings in Wisconsin, the state saw declines in all four categories, as did all states. The state is in the top 10 overall in outcomes in three of the four categories. And a longstanding racial divide in Wisconsin is still there, with once again the biggest gap between black and white students in test results, though some states didn't release that kind of data. Our next guest says the exam confirms what we already knew about the impact of the pandemic, but he's worried about an overreaction. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you noticed your child's learning rate changing during the pandemic? If you're a teacher, how's your teaching changed, if at all? Are things getting back to normal in schools for reading and math? If you're a teacher, student, or parent yourself, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Harry Fader is a retired teacher and executive director of Fair Test with the National Center for Fair and Open Testing. Harry, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Well, you emailed before this test came out. You put out a statement saying we're expecting some declines, but we're worried about an overreaction. What kind of concerns did you have?
Well, obviously the results of the NAEP are not good. Nobody's happy with them. Mm-hmm. But my concern is really, and our concern as an organization, is that these results don't set off alarms and panic buttons that cause schools and school districts to say, hey, what we need to do is to actually test kids more. And so what we're concerned about is that it will be used in it as an excuse by those forces who simply want to constantly monitor student progress in a way that is not helpful at all for the actual educational growth and development of students. Because what students need is learning time, not testing time.
Yeah, let's talk about the tests, the use and maybe misuse of them. First of all, something like this National Assessment of Educational Progress, it is a there are no stakes here for an individual student, as
right.
I understand it. I don't need to pass this to go to the ninth grade, for example.
Right.
Is this kind of test a useful benchmark to see how things are going in our schools?
Oh, yeah. We have no objection to the NAEP per se for a variety of reasons. As you yourself stated, there are no high stakes consequences attached to these tests. So we can get a picture of what's going on in schools without punishing and penalizing students, teachers, and schools. And yet we sort of get a window into how students are progressing, how learning is going. The other thing about the NAEP that's a positive, it's done on a sort of matrix sampling basis. So not every kid sits for the test. It's just sort of a representative sample of students of different demographic groups in different parts of the country. And you can also compare states, and, you know, in this round, you could also see how big cities are doing, because there's a sort of a program that looks at how big cities are doing. So NAEP as sort of a light into what is going on in education is fine. The problem is when you have standardized tests that are given repeatedly at every grade level, that and then also are used for promotion, for tying it to teacher performance pay, all sorts of high stakes consequences. That what winds up happening then is you wind up having teachers and systems teaching to the test, which is no good. And also it actually like cuts in on time. But NAEP as a window into what's going on, I mean, it's a pretty good system.
We'll spend a little more time on the downsides of over-testing, but with something like the NAEP, this national assessment, mm-hmm. what are you hoping we do with this information, whether it's a normal year, if there is such a thing, or this kind of
right.
abnormal period, after, you know, a couple years after schools were just flat out closed in many cases and virtual learning during the pandemic?
Right. Well, I think we can, first of all, take a look at different places in the country and see, you know, why some places might have done better than others. So, for example, in this go round, you know, LA, I mean, scores went down a little bit, but LA did relatively held its own. And so, you know, what can we learn from what Los Angeles did over the last couple of years that distinguished it from some other places? And, you know, it turns out they had a pretty robust system of trying to get laptops to kids. You know, they were trying to sort of do online learning in a little more robust fashion and invest in professional development. The superintendent there, Alberto Carvalho, you know, the district he left, which was Miami, actually didn't do so bad either. So, you know, maybe there's something systemically that they're doing that is worthwhile. So, you know, NAEP itself, the raw numbers don't tell, they tell you whether things are going up or down. And, you know, if you look at certain items, you can see what percentage of kids responded, you know, got an item right. So that gives you sort of a little window on the kind of learning that's going on. It also, as you, you know, as the beginning of your piece showed, with respect to Wisconsin and around the country, it also certainly tells us where the disparities lie. And so, you know, here, the other thing that happened is kids, the lower performing kids, actually nationally, their scores went down more than the higher performing kids. So that tells us that we need to sort of focus on where the gaps are, where the inequities are, how to funnel resources and teaching resources and learning resources and curriculum and sort of extra enrichment programs. You know, people are talking about concentrated tutoring, which if done well, can be a good thing. But, you know, tutoring from somebody who isn't your actual teacher, that doesn't always work necessarily. For certain things. So, I mean, I think the lessons that we want to draw, and the other broad lesson is obviously in-person learning matters, because the disruption of not actually being in school for fourth graders and for eighth graders for over a year certainly did something that was out of the ordinary in terms of test scores.
We're talking to Harry Fader, Executive Director of Fair Test with the National Center for Fair and Open Testing, looking at a report released by the National Assessment of Educational Progress that shows students' math and reading abilities went down, according to the test, since the start of the pandemic. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen this happening in your classroom, in your family? And how about testing? Do you feel like if you're a parent, a student, you work at a school, there's too much standardized testing of one sort or another? This NAEP, this NAEP, is just one test of many out there. Are we getting test clog in our schools? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Harry Fader, Executive Director of Fair Test with the National Center for Fair and Open Testing. With us to talk about an exam from the National Assessment of Educational Progress. It shows a decline in students' math and reading abilities. That's one test. There are lots of tests out there. Maybe, he says, too many. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions to these results, your concerns about how we do standardized tests in schools. 800-642-1234 is the number, or email ideas@WPR.org. Harry, the NAEP, as I just said, it's one test. How many tests are kids, standardized tests, are kids going through as they go through their school career?
I mean, it depends on the state. There's certainly, you know, there are federal mandates that said kids have to be tested in reading, math, and science grades 3 through 8, and then at least once in high school. And then a lot of states have lots of other tests. There's also now a move towards doing something called through-year tests, which are generally produced by testing companies and are sort of online, computer-generated, iterative tests that try to give educators a sense of sort of where a kid is. And, you know, I think there was a statistic that by the time a kid graduated high school, they've taken 170 different standardized tests during their educational career. So, you know, we as a country, certainly with the advent of No Child Left Behind, even though that has sort of been scaled back because that was an abject failure, kids are tested with external instruments. And frankly, there are a lot of better ways to measure kids' progress and to see how they're doing and how they're learning. You know, I mean, teachers give tests all the time to see. They give a little quiz, they give a test at the end of a unit. So I'm not even counting that stuff. I'm talking about what we would call standardized tests that are produced externally. There are also ways of assessing kids' knowledge. We call them performance-based assessments, where kids will do a project or a presentation. They'll have to collaborate with other kids, and the assessment will be tied to what is actually being learned in the classroom and also demonstrations of certain skills. And, you know, educators have developed what we call rubrics to judge how well a kid is doing and what skills have been demonstrated. And, you know, there are places around the country, both at the lower school level and at the high school level, where this kind of assessment is not only it's viewed as superior because you really get a more holistic picture of what a kid knows as opposed to a pencil and paper test, but it really allows for kids to develop skills of critical thinking, of speaking, of analysis, and you know, in fields like math and science, of actual problem solving, of math problems, in science of actually doing experiments and learning the scientific method and not just sort of memorizing things and regurgitating them. So, you know, there's a lot out there in the realm of assessment that I think our educational systems are hopefully moving towards and, you know, realizing that there are better ways of knowing what kids know and the skills they have than off-the-shelf standardized tests.
Let's go to our callers now. Doug is with us in Portage. Doug, hi.
Hi. I'm retired now. I spent 25 years of my professional life as a chemist, and then I switched over and became a high school science teacher and did that for about 15 years. And so I want to speak specifically about the ACT science test, because
sure,
parts of it are wonderful, but the overall thing of it is ridiculous. The parts that are wonderful is it is gauged where I would want a student to be, the type of knowledge that they should have by the time they're turned loose from high school. Actually, it's geared where they should be at in ninth grade, because we don't know how if kids took advanced anything.
Gotcha. Doug, what's the ridiculous part?
They do 40 questions in 35 minutes. What we have
there
to
you
do
go.
To try to get the kids to have a chance to pass it is tell them, don't read the text, because they're given a text and then questions on it. Skip to the questions and then go back and find the pertinent information. It will usually tell you what chart to pull it out of.
Doug, thanks for the call. And the ACT required still, I believe, for 11th graders here in Wisconsin. Your thoughts, Harry?
Well, it's interesting. Is the ACT, and I just don't know, being used in Wisconsin as the high school requirement under federal education law, under ESSA, because a lot of states use ACTs or SATs. They basically just give it to kids because that is how they fulfill their ESSA requirement. So that may be the case. I know that the Wisconsin state system, certainly University of Wisconsin, is a test optional school. And so you can apply and get in there without submitting an ACT or SAT score. You know, it's interesting what Doug said about the ACT science. I mean, I've looked at it, and obviously the speed at which you have to process things and do things, that's not about science, that's about test taking. So I agree that it is abjectly ridiculous. Also, you know, I would submit that there are better ways of knowing whether a student understands chemistry and understands science. I mean, you could and as I was referring to, you know, have them at, as a culminating activity, come up with a hypothesis, conduct an experiment, in addition to sort of having them demonstrate that they understand concepts in chemistry and write about them and speak about them and present them. And, you know, that certainly would tell you more than 45-minute, 60-question standardized test.
Doug, thanks for that call. Time for one more caller. Jake is with us in Appleton. Jake, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. I myself took the ACT, SAT, and many other standardized tests for college entrance. And I will say I'm open to or excited to hear about new testing, but please replace an existing one instead of adding it on top. For
Jake,
me personally, my parents took a lot of money out of their, you know, pockets to pay for tutoring and books, and that stuff's not cheap.
Jake, thanks for the call. Jake, or Harry, that general philosophy, if you're adding tests to the equation, take something away. What do you think?
Well, I would take away what's there already. I don't think we need to, we certainly don't need to add, and I think there are too many and they're being used badly. I think there, as I've said, there are better ways of assessing student knowledge and skills. And, you know, just something that Jake talked about was his parents spending all this money, you know, for tutoring programs that, that are completely external to the regular public school or even private school curriculum. And just imagine your parents maybe scraped to do that stuff, but there are a lot of kids out there who can't afford that kind of test prep. And that's why there is a very, very serious equity problem presented by the ACT and the SAT as requirements. And if you look at the College Board's own data, there is only one thing that SAT scores correlate to, and that is family income. So you tell me if that's a good way of admitting kids into college.
Jake, thanks for the call. And Harry, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
That's Harry Fader, Executive Director of Fair Test with the National Center for Fair and Open Testing, looking at new national test results and the value or lack of same of some standardized tests. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show, take a trip to music class. Check out the State of Music Education in Wisconsin. Join in with your questions and experiences tomorrow on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, listening to music can put us in a mood or enhance the one we're already in. And whether or not you're already in a fall mood, we're going to enjoy a bumper harvest of folk songs for the next half hour. These are songs about and inspired by the season, from the work of harvesting itself to the beauty of fall to straight-up spooky murder ballads. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is on your fall soundtrack? Is there an artist, a song that really captures the season for you? Maybe while you're looking at leaves or changing into a sweater? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sheila Shigley is host of WPR's Simply Folk. You can listen to Sheila and Simply Folk every Sunday from 5 to 8 p.m. on the Ideas Network and the News and Music Network here at WPR. Sheila, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. I'm super glad to be here with you.
All right, before we get to some specific music, do you find your musical tastes or needs change with the seasons?
They do change with the seasons. I think just the natural ups and downs of emotions. I mean, I always get sort of like a sweet melancholy at autumn. So, yeah, I bet if I were to go back and track my listening habits, I would find that would be shifting.
And I find often fall is a throwback season for me, where I want to listen to stuff that I maybe associate with fall X number of years ago. Do you find some of that too?
I do, yeah. And there's the obvious. Now, I'm immersed in folk music. So, to me, fall music includes things like, you know, folk songs from the Republic of Georgia and, you know, Scottish walking songs, you know, stuff that would make the work easier. But yeah, just a whole range of emotions. In autumn in general is a pretty emotional time for me.
All right, well, let's set up the first song, Pastures of Plenty, a song, I guess, written by Woody Guthrie. Talk about the version we're about to hear.
So we're going to hear a version by Solas, and I love this one because it is just so, so energized. They do such a great job with it.
All right, here's a taste.
It's a mighty cargo, my poor hands are the fold. My poor feet have traveled this hot, dusty road. Out of your towers, boy.
Why are we kicking off with this one, Sheila?
We're kicking off with this one because I think, because to me, the last couple years have made me take harvest a little less for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, I think many of us listening, maybe we went through the pandemic from a place of privilege, or at least we had full bellies. But I think whoever we are, we probably wondered at some point, is the food going to keep coming? So to me, harvest is a little, as hard as it is for me to even grow an herb without it expiring. All these things that have happened in the past 2 years, including trying to grow my own food, have just made me really respect harvest more. And then thinking about the lives of harvest workers, and that song was written by Woody Guthrie for that reason.
Right, and this is, you know, Woody Guthrie. This is not a brand new song, but the themes remain.
The themes remain, and Solas has done such a good job over the years of they've taken. Of course, they're an Irish band. They're made up of Irish and American players. But they've taken American folk songs and reworked them into the Irish tradition. So it's just good all around.
Okay, the next song is Hard Times by the group Gob Iron. Tell us about this one.
Gob Iron is actually Uncle Tupelo and Sunvolt's Jay Farrar along with Anders Parker. And it is a beautiful, beautiful tapestry of sort of gritty, gritty emotion. They've taken old folk songs, reworked them, put in their own words, and then there's a musical interlude between each. It's just a beautiful project.
All right, here's a little bit of that one by Gob Iron.
Ain't got long in this world. In the meantime, I want these hard times to come again no more.
So that fall melancholy feeling I'm hearing here.
Yeah, fall melancholy, and you've probably heard that Stephen Foster song in a number of different ways. It is about hard times and just this like emotion of like wishing the hard times away. Yeah, so emotional, and the album is so beautiful because it's very closely recorded. In a world where sometimes albums can be so loud, it's just really beautiful to hear just two voices, two guitars. It's just spacious and gorgeous.
Now, both of our picks so far, older songs, newer bands, and you mentioned you also play songs from around the world. Do you find that folk music brings you a sense of connection with people, whether they're on the other side of the world or from a century, you know, or two ago?
It does, because, I mean, if you think about it, what are the first two themes have been, you know, harvest and food, maybe even a little bit of hunger, and then hard times. I mean, who hasn't touched those things in their life or come close to it? And, the role of songs, something besides love songs, and I have nothing against love songs at all. I mean, I write love songs all day.
You play occasional love songs
yes,
on your show, too.
Yes, we do. But then just the role of music in our other emotions like survival and eating and working, and that's what folk music is partially all about.
Sheila Shigley is with us, host of WPR Simply Folk. She is giving us some musical inspiration, some samples of great folk music for the autumn season, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page if you have a favorite fall piece of music. It doesn't even have to be folk. 800-642-1234. We heard from Murray, who said we missed an opportunity to play Pastors of Plenty, the version by Odetta.
Odetta, yes, we have it. I'll take that as a request for the coming request
nice.
Show. How's that?
Yeah, definitely. There's got to be a lot of versions of that
song. So many versions. I wouldn't know where to begin. Like, if I were to go back to the library around the corner right now and count, I don't know how many there would be.
Okay, now back to some of your music. We're seeing, I think, some of the last leaves of autumn. Tell us about the next song, First Leaves of Autumn.
This is called The First Leaves of Autumn, and it's actually a Gallagher and Lyle song, maybe less known here in the States. They were a Scottish band, but Ger O'Donnell is this wonderful Irish guitarist and songwriter, and he just keeps appearing in people's videos. Like, he was in the States singing with the Petersons. He just keeps showing up in people's videos, and that's what I love about the modern situation, is you can just go record a song and release it tomorrow. But he happens to be really good, and he's singing here with Pat Coyne from Cong in Ireland.
As the daylight turns to starlight and the seasons turn to change, I'll get the same old answers, but the questions still remain. We shared that brief and magic song by the first leaves of autumn. You were done. Not until the rain has touched my face. Not until
First Leaves of Autumn by Jer O'Donnell and Pat Coyne. Have you seen people getting more creative with collaboration across even international boundaries in folk music?
Yeah, Jer just showed up. Like, I don't know. It was Pat's studio. I don't know if Pat was planning on having him on
Left the
song.
Unlocked.
He just, like, walked in and sang it with him. And, of course, we wouldn't have it any other way. We've played it quite a lot here on Simply Folk across the last 2 years since it happened. But I love that spontaneous collaboration that's going on now.
Okay, now here's one that I understand is close to your heart, a traditional Irish language ballad about the beauty of autumn. My Gaelic extends to about a half an hour of Duolingo. So I'll ask you to introduce the song and the name and tell us a little bit about it.
It's called Gwibara na Don, and it means Gwibara of the Waves. And when I was 14, I had a habit of listening to Simply Folk, and I came rushing in, and I threw on my tape recorder. I know that's illegal, but I was 14. I didn't know any better. And I just, you know, started recording, and this song came on. I had never heard anything like it in my life, and it literally changed the course of my life. It's probably why I'm here, actually, at public radio, because I was just so captivated by it.
Tagalad na gon lae giri se spe Skirian wi anovar ik tamu sa wir Tanabaho gidrandan san chan jeladan Fogi baran na gulcha
Moya Brennan there. Now, about the beauty of autumn, but yeah, this inspired you, I think, to learn Gaelic?
To learn Gaelic.
To pursue music?
To pursue music, to the idea of singing unaccompanied. It just rocked my world. It's just so the opposite. I mean, I love rock songs, don't get me wrong, I love them, but to hear just the human voice stripped down, it just rocked my world. That's actually Enya's sister. You may be in listener land. I'm sure you've heard of Enya, the singer. This is Moya Brennan, her sister, singing.
That sounds, speaks to the power of music, too. That one song can, like, hit you probably, you know, just in the right moment. Maybe if you'd heard it a week or later or earlier, who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? And then to find out, I was going to do this song anyway today, and then our wonderful producer reminded me that the songs were supposed to be about autumn, and I'm like, oh, and I'm like, wait, the whole song is about autumn. So I was glad to be able to sneak it in, but the words are just so amazing. And at the end, the poet says, I have one request at the end of my life, that my soul should reside among the brown leaves that grow on your shores, Gwibara of the Waves.
We're talking to Sheila Shigley, host of WPR's Simply Folk, talking about folk music written for and about the fall season, from serene, scenic, melancholy to spooky. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a favorite fall song, a favorite autumn-related folk song in particular that you love to hear, maybe to sing your own self, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation. Hear some more songs on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Sheila Shigley, host of WPR's Simply Folk, taking us through a fall seasonal soundtrack from Songs of the Harvest and Home and even some horror. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Becca is with us in Elk Mound. Becca, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I don't have any folk-specific songs, but I'm a teacher, and right now my students are really loving just pumpkin spice jazz music. We just search that online, and it comes up with awesome playlists that are all instrumental music. They really enjoy that. And also, I have three little girls, and so our season is filled with two songs, Ghostbusters theme song and Werewolves of London on repeat constantly.
Becca, thanks so much for sharing that with us. Well, that takes us into the scary part of our itinerary here, Sheila. What do you have for us? A Sheila K. Adams clip, I think.
We have Sheila K. Adams. So we've been spending some time in Ireland, and now we're going to bring it across the pond. And this is a song that started out in the old world and came over here. And we're going to hear Sheila K. Adams explain a little bit about that.
I think probably what happened when these ballads started to be passed down from generation to generation. That probably happened in the old country over in Scotland and England. And it was like historical recitation, if you know what I mean. Like an event would take place, and then they would write this big long song about it. And a lot of those songs that they sang over there came over here because that was a part of home.
Oh, holiday, oh, holy day, the first day of the year. Little Matthew Groves to church did go, some holy words to hear. Here's some holy words to hear. He spied some women dressed in black as they came into view. Lord Dan'l's wife was gaily clad, the flower of the few, the flower of the few. She stepped up to little Matthew Groves, her eyes cast on the ground. Said, please, oh, please come with me, stay as you pass through this town, town as you pass through this town. Oh, please come with me, stay, I'll hide thee out of sight. I'll pleasure you beyond compare and sleep with you all night. Night, I'll sleep with you all night.
Well, I don't know, Sheila, the minor key makes me think this isn't going to end well.
It doesn't end well. Oh. It doesn't end well for everybody. but we're going to go on to another version of that in a minute. And this is such a great metaphor because traditional song is so much like planting and growing things. Like it grows and it flowers and then the seeds drop and then it becomes something new. And it just keeps changing as it goes from hand to hand and mouth to mouth.
She gave us Fairport Convention doing their version of Matty Groves. Here's a listen. So it seems like there's this wave of Fairport Convention and I think, Steel Eye Span and other kind of electrified, drummed up versions of older folk songs.
Yes. And of course, at first it would shock people. And then, of course, they got used to it and it just kept undulating and it got new life. I mean, that's the same song. This is the same song we just heard Sheila K. Adams sing, Separated by Generations and Thousands of Miles.
That is Matty Groves by Fairport Convention, talking to Sheila Shigley, our own Sheila Shigley from WPR's Simply Folk. Back to your calls now as we talk about great folk music for the fall season, spooky or otherwise. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Terry is with us now in Appleton. Terry, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about, Terry?
Well, I've got a lot of favorite songs. If you're talking about Fairport, of course, there, Tam Lynn is terrific. But a good Wisconsin fall song is The Fall Here by Clay Rynas, which came out about 20 years ago. Terrific Wisconsin singer-songwriter.
Terry, thanks for sharing it. I see you nodding, I think, Sheila.
I agree. We have Clay Rynas' albums in our library on our shelf. So grateful for that.
Terry, thanks a lot for that call. Can you talk a little bit about the folk scene here in Wisconsin? There's a lot of chances to see good folk music in the state, autumn or I guess other parts of the year too.
It is thriving. I mean, we are hardy souls here in Wisconsin, so the outdoor concerts will probably still keep going for a good few more weeks. You can check things out at simplyfolk.org and find out the folk calendar is up and running there, and it'll let you know what's still going on. And of course, then we move to indoor concerts. So we have a very active folk scene from the top to the bottom of this state.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're not going to get to all the songs you shared with us. Let's stay spooky. Tell us about, how about Shankill Butchers by Sarah Jarosz?
Sarah Jarosz is one of my favorite. I call her a young singer. She's been around now for at least 10 years, and she has written an album full of just dynamite songs. This is from her debut album. This is from about 10 years ago. It's called The Shankill Butchers. It's a Halloween song.
Butchers ride tonight. You better shut your windows tight. They're sharpening their cleavers and their knives.
taking all the whiskey by the pint, 'cause everybody knows.
Again, one that's not going to end well, I guess.
You know, as long as you stay inside, you'll stay away from those cleavers. But yeah, who doesn't love a good spooky song at this time of year? It's, you know, time to put on a fire, sit around and tell ghost stories, sing some of these numbers maybe.
All right, well, let's get less scary now. Here's another seasonal one. This is a Neil Young song, Harvest Moon. Tell us about the cover version you have here.
The cover version features A.J. Lee, and she's singing here with her brother's comatose. A.J. Lee is another one of those singers who's in high demand. She's very young, even younger than Sarah. I think she's barely 19 at this point, and she's singing here with the brother's comatose.
A lot of room in folk music for good Neil Young covers, I imagine.
Yeah, and A.J. Lee, she might not even be 19. She's been singing since she was about 9 or 10.
Wow.
She sings with Molly Tuttle. It used to be the Tuttles and A.J. Lee. And, of course, now they're all going on to win Grammys here and there. But great stuff. If you were at Sugar Maple Folk Festival this year, you may have seen A.J. Lee. She usually tours with her band Blue Summit.
All right, time for one more caller. Barbara is with us in Mundelein, Illinois. Do I have that right, Barbara?
Yes.
And what did you want to share with us?
Well, you mentioned Gaelic music. We're seeing Altan on Sunday there. I don't know if I can say her name.
I bet Sheila could fill in the gap for you. Altan, I think you're familiar with, Sheila.
Yep, Moyani Weenie.
And,
yes, they're going to be in Chicago on Sunday, and she sings beautiful, mystical, magical Gaelic songs.
Talk a little bit about Altan, Sheila.
I just think so highly of them. And, of course, they're neighbors of Moya Brennan. So you know, those sisters went on to found Clannad, and Enya went solo. And then just down the road were the Niweenies, the Omeenies, as we would say, and they were forming their band Altan. So, yes, I highly agree with you. This is going to be a wonderful, wonderful show.
Barbara, thanks a lot for sharing that, and enjoy the show today. Oh, let's pick one more. Waterbound by Rhiannon Giddens and Francesco Terisi. Tell us about it before we play it.
Rhiannon is just, she's in so many wonderful, wonderful projects. You may know her with Our Native Daughters. You may know her with her work with Francesco Terisi. And I think at the end, autumn is just, I mean, all seasons are, but autumn especially is really just about coming together, missing home, and just enjoying the warmth of community.
All right, let's go listen to Waterbound.
Chickens crowing in an old pine tree. Chickens crowing in an old pine tree. Chickens crowing in an old pine tree down in North Carolina.
Sheila, thanks so much for sharing all this great music with us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
That's Sheila Shigley, host of WPR Simply Folk. She was with us to share some seasonal folk music and heighten our fall mood. We'll have to do this more often. Listen to Sheila and Simply Folk every Sunday from 5 to 8 p.m. on the Ideas Network, the News and Music Network. She even plays the whole songs. You don't really get to do that here. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, Wisconsin photographer Pete Souza shares his time working in the White House and his new book called Beyond the Oval Office. We'll look at Russia, Ukraine, and U.S. policy as we head toward the midterms. And if you want to visit a state park, start with a visit to the library. You can check out state park passes. That's today, tomorrow on Central Time from 3 until 6.